Welcome to the Biz for Good show with your hosts, Bobby Glenn James and Ryan Pilkington. The Biz for Good podcast is a fun and adventurous series that dives into the world of business, nonprofit, and startups, making a difference in the world for good. Get ready for another episode. Hey, cue that sick intro.
For good.
Welcome, welcome, folks, to the Biz for Good show. Hashtag
be good, do good.
Hashtag
be good, do good.
Hashtag
be good, do good.
All right, welcome to Epitode. That's a new thing. Welcome to Epitode 16. It's an epic toad is what it is, actually. Epic toad. No, this is episode 16, where, as always, we do not edit anything. So what you hear is what you get. What we say is what you get. Let's just say that. Except for the last Chuck interview, I did edit out the One Piece because we wanted to keep it PG.
Yeah.
And that was a complete accident.
Biz for coolness.
Biz for coolness. So episode 16, we've got a great person. Of course, an amazing guest today, Paul Tanner. He's done a TED Talk. He's a powerful artist doing some amazing art for good because he does reconstruction, he does prosthetics, and creates amazing things for folks who have lost different parts of their body.
Yeah, his site is feelingwholeagain.com.
Feelingwholeagain.com. Check out his TED Talk. We're going to put his TED Talk at the bottom of the page, so you can check it out. Neat guy. We're going to be talking to him later, so you guys will get to hear that. Right now, we're going to do our new segments, right?
We got a new segment lineup, different things happening, so get you used to the new and the groovy.
New and the groovy, and we're starting with
Biz Hack.
Where was the sound effects,
Ryan? Cha-ching!
There was supposed to be sound effects, I thought. You're the sound effects guy. We're going to have to get you a thing just for sound effects. Yeah.
Cha-ching! All right, Biz Hack for today is marketing to millennials. I found this article with Shopify.com. You can go there, search it in their articles of awesomeness. Just really quick, this is a quick article, but you can read more about it. They have a bunch of stuff on marketing to millennials. Millennials are placing more and more trust into social media influencers. In fact, 60% of millennials have said that they would try a product suggested by a YouTuber, and third consider blogs to be the top media source when researching a purchase.
Interesting. It's a whole new world now from when we were out there young and pups and excited. Social media just blows me away. I mean, we had TV. I mean, we didn't really have... I mean, the friends you had were the friends you met at school, and that was basically it. You didn't get to chat with people around the country and world.
That's why you got all these crazy commercials for Saturday mornings, you know.
Saturday mornings?
Saturday morning cartoons. You know, you'd be watching cartoons.
That was my thing. That was everybody's thing. That's what we had. Now, my kids are like, Saturday morning cartoons. What the crap is that? I watch cartoons 24/7.
Yes.
I can do cartoons whenever I want to.
Cartoon Network. CartoonNetwork.com. YouTube.
Yeah, you name it. I can. It's kind of crazy how it's just all thrown at you constantly. It kind of freaks me out. But who knows what the future will bring? It's cool, it's fun, but man, I think it's shortening our attention span. I can't just sit around and do nothing. But all right, so that's a biz hack.
That is the biz hack. There's
social media is important, media, people.
Influencers.
It gets people to buy things, but you got to understand that social media isn't about selling. It's about the brand. It's about showing people the brand and want to be a part of your movement and your brand, not about, hey, you want to buy my widget, you want to buy my thing, right?
Right.
Cool. Okay, Eight Wisdoms Moment. We're going to talk about the Eight Wisdoms Moment today. Again, Ryan, thank you for bringing up the thought process of doing an Eight Wisdoms Moment. Instead of actually talking about one of the Eight Wisdoms, I'm kind of going to do a preface of the book. At the beginning of the book, it's about a boy who loses his family, and it's dramatic. There's a raider that comes into the town, and he kills the whole town. You know, he basically destroys the whole town, and the boy comes in later, and I'm not going to tell the whole story, but anyway, the point is this boy has lost everything. He's lost his family, the little village that he lives in, and he basically has no reason to live anymore. And a person sends him on a path to find the master, because he asks, Lolian is the lady's name, and she is called the Seeker. She is seeking out, and you don't know till later, but she's seeking out something. She tells him, or when he tells her that, you know, life is horrible, I don't want to live, you know, it's an evil world, I hate life, I should just die, why is life so bad and full of so many bad people? And Lolian tells him that, well, go see the master, because the master knows the answer to that. And so he goes on a trek to see the master to find out, you know, what's the point of life? Why do we live on this cruel, horrible world? And I bring that up only because a lot of us kind of dwell in that and fall in that place that, man, life really is crappy and it's hard and this sucks and, you know, it's just not fun, and I wish my life was better. I wish I had something better in my life. And truthfully, as Shinhan goes through learning the Eight Wisdoms, he realizes, and of course you find that out later, that life is what you make it. Life is what you make it. Life is what you see is what you get. What you connect with in life is what you get. And if you connect with how sucky it is and how horrible it is, yeah, you're right.
It's going to suck.
Yeah. And so I'm going to just leave that with you. Get the book. Check it out. But no, life is what you make it. It either sucks or it's good. And either way, you're right.
I just came across some information that I thought was really cool about a lot of these superstars and celebrities. And I know we're probably not going to interview any more celebrities.
Unless they are really doing good and doing something, or at least, well, I don't know.
Get our game up.
We might get excited and go blindside somebody else. Why not? I mean, hey, that was fun.
A lot of their stories are interesting, how they've taken that pain. Like, you think, oh, they just... I mean, we all hear the stories where they have to, like...
Go
through a lot of crap to get to the good.
To be famous. All these overnight sensations, you know, did their work for 10 years before they became overnight sensations. And people don't realize that.
So, when you're going through those hard times, and in relating into the book,
mm-hmm.
a little discussion here, how does Shinhan, I guess, start realizing that those trials are important to him? Like, is it at a certain point in the book?
That he understands.
But he's starting to understand that maybe this. I know in the second chapter he starts. Wait a minute.
Because he starts to learn. Because of course the second chapter is about, or the second wisdom is about learning.
Yeah.
So he kind of sees. Well, and I can think of a specific time with that, in there with the clock, where he's really upset that he spent months and months trying to fix this clock, and he finds out it's a very simple fix, and he's like, man, this sucked, I wasted all this time.
Yeah,
but he didn't realize, and it wasn't until later when he talked to the merchant that he realized, oh, wait a minute, I just learned a lot.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, I'm a master clocksmith now because of all of the hours and hours I spent. Even though it was a simple problem, now I understand the clock inside and out. And that's early on in the book, but there's some other portions where it's interesting. Because it's kind of deliberate that Shinhan is—he's stupid sometimes. You know, it takes him a minute to get a stubborn. Yeah, absolutely. That's it. It takes him a little bit, and truthfully, it's kind of connected with my life. I've been stubborn in my life. You know what I mean? Yeah, we turned that on. Oopsie. That was the sound effects, folks. But anyway, so yeah. Life is a beautiful thing, and sometimes the hard stuff is what makes us the great, powerful people that we are.
I worked with an associate doing graphic design, and every day she came in, put her stuff on the desk, Oh my gosh, my life sucked. Oh, and the whole she was only there 4 hours out of my day, and I had to share a desk. Let me tell you, I was like done at the end of the day. She sucked the life force out of me. You know, all of a sudden I'm like, my life sucks, and you know, and I was realizing there's this toxic thing going on in people's lives where you just get kind of bogged
focus
down.
On the negative. They focus on the bad stuff. And I'm, you know, I don't talk about you should just always have a positive attitude no matter what. We just don't, you know. Physically, we as human beings, it kept us alive to be worried about things in nature, right? It kept us from getting eaten by bears and stuff. But, and in the book, it kind of talks, and I've devoted my whole life to kind of learning how to focus on what's good in the world, what's good in my life, and have gratitude for even the bad stuff that's made me who I am, so... Yeah, that's the wisdom moment. Eight wisdoms moment. All right, let's turn it around to the good news today. What's good in news today, Ryan? I heard you're going to attach to our last episode. What's good news?
Yeah, you know, we met Chuck Norris. Maybe we have some subconscious thing going on with Chuck Norris, because you just reminded me I did an article and shared when we first started about Chuck Norris. Now I'm sharing
Chuck
another
is one. Doing good in the world. I mean, he's if you look at some of the things he's doing a lot for some different folks. And you're going to read one right now, right?
Yep. So I'll put this on our... Actually, it's on our Facebook page right now. And you can go and check out everything about it. I'm just giving you like a really quick snippet. It's in relation to... how we went to Maverick and met Chuck Norris. He actually was on a tour, and he was at another location in Logan, actually kind of where I grew up. And he met this kid, Jonathan, who and a big-time fan of Chuck Norris. In this article, he said, "You have a spirit of Texas Ranger." He said, "You have a spirit of Texas Ranger," said Jonathan, who admires Norris. Because he's a true American. He is a patriotic and helps people. What Norris doesn't know is what his actions and words meant to Jonathan, said Leanne. He was tired and he was hot and he had just shook the hands of 1,000 people, but he took the time to make this boy feel wonderful. He said just exactly the right things to this boy. Johnny wishes he could be in law enforcement. And he salutes every flag he sees now. So, anyways, there's
that's cool.
Little Chuck Norris moment. There's a lot in there to go over, but he's
check out the article.
Check out the article.
Yeah, check out the article. It'll be on our Facebook page. Speak up. No, that's not
this for a good
this
show.
For a good show. It's been a long day, Ryan. It's been a long day.
Oh, yeah. Putting out fires.
All right. That's our good news today. Okay. Quote of the day. We got a quote of the day today.
Quote of the day. This comes from Buddha.
I've heard of him.
Yeah.
He's bald.
I'm going to let you read it.
Okay. Just as treasures are uncovered from the earth, so virtue appears from good deeds, and wisdom appears from a pure and peaceful mind. To walk safely through the maze of human life, one needs the light of wisdom and the guidance of virtue.
Wow.
500 BC. Ooh.
I think it's amazing how things from that long ago are still relevant today.
Yeah.
So, any thoughts on that? I surprised you with that one today. So, want to read it again?
Yeah, let's read it again. I'm a big fan of trying to figure it out. Just as treasures are uncovered from the earth. Treasures are uncovered from the earth. So virtue appears from good deeds. That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
We're finding people that are doing good deeds. We're interviewing people that are doing great things, powerful things in the world. And wisdom appears from a pure and peaceful mind.
Mm.
Wisdom appears. So when you're going crazy and you're stressed and you got too much, you're not thinking as well and powerful as you could if you've got a pure and peaceful mind and you're not thinking evil, mean thoughts and all that good stuff. To walk safely through the maze of human life, one needs the light of wisdom. So again, you must... And I love the word wisdom. It's why I called the book Wisdom, you know, eight wisdoms instead of eight knowledge or whatever. Because knowledge, lots of people can know a lot, but you can know things and not do it.
Yeah.
And that's not wise. No. Wisdom is when you know things and you know how to implement those things. That's wisdom. That's the difference.
And I think when people are going through this drudge that Shinhan was going through, you know, it's the wisdom and knowledge that you take. And if you're focusing on good wisdom and good things, then
it moves you forward.
It moves you forward.
In a positive way.
Positive.
Yeah, in a good way. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's life is what you make it, man. Okay. Should we go to our interview with Mr. Paul Tanner. Paul Tanner. Neat guy. You guys are going to love him. Super, super cool. And we'll catch you on the down low.
On the down.
Hashtag.
Be good. Do good.
Hashtag.
Be good, do good.
Hashtag.
Be good, do good.
Welcome, folks. Welcome to the Biz for Good show. I am your host, Bobby Gunn James, along with co-host Ryan Pilkington. We're here for episode 16, Ryan. Episode 16. We're making our march to the 20 with a super awesome, powerful guest today, Paul Tanner. Paul Tanner, thank you. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Well, we're just going to jump into the interview and talk about Paul and see what Paul's all about and see what's going on. Does that sound good, Paul?
That sounds great.
Yeah, I'm all for it.
Awesome. Okay, so tell us, Paul. Tell us about Paul. Who is Paul Tanner?
Sure. So I am an anaplastologist, and I'll bet your listeners they've never heard that word before. But an anaplastologist is someone that makes lifelike prosthetics. So I make ears, eyes, noses, hands, arms, legs, feet, and breast prosthetics.
Wow.
And my specialty, what makes me different from, you know, the arms and legs that you typically see, is that my specialty, my niche, is making things look real.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, you know, usually this is where we ask what Biz for Good is for you, but man, I'm like, well, how did you get into that? So we got all kinds of questions that were like, how do you become
sure.
that? So let's go ahead and stay on track.
Is there a school?
Yeah, we're going to find out. We're going to find out okay. from Paul. But first, we like to ask, go ahead, Ryan.
All right, yeah. So you're on the Biz for Good show. We always like to ask, what does Biz for Good mean to you, Paul?
Sure. So I have a very unique talent, and what I've seen over the years is that I make lifelike prosthetics, but I don't just make it I could mass produce prosthetics. That's what most everyone does, but I make them lifelike, and I try to give the people what they had in order to make them feel better, to make them feel whole. Hmm. So I'm after not... I'm after the... it's almost like a self-improvement or self-betterment. You know, like, I want these people to gain... emotionally or psychologically from the prosthesis. I want them to basically go on with their normal lives the way they want to, and I don't want them to focus on you know, some facial defect or any some sort of difference, you know. that they have. I want them to just live the life that they want.
So for you,
I'm in for improving lives.
Yeah. So for you, that's biz for good. Is improving other people's lives, and for you, it's a specific thing. But in the world as a whole, and I think everybody we have on the show, biz for good is it usually has something to do with connecting with their potential clients and customers that they make a world better for their potential clients and customers.
Sure.
Awesome.
So let's go back to that question. How did I get in this film?
Yes. Oh, this is where we're excited.
Okay. Because I felt like I needed that. This has been an evolving story. This was actually my dream job. When I was in high school, I was an artist. And, I would do lots of paintings and sculptures. I'd paint cars. I'd make T-shirts. You know, I do just kind of whatever. And then I had a relative in my family that had cancer on his ear. And this was a pretty hard blow to our family. And so I became, you know, I saw what was involved in this, and I was actually able to go job shadow when I was in high school. And I saw them making an ear prosthesis. So this was in Texas where I went, and that became my dream. And I studied art and science in college, and I did business as an undergrad, or sorry, as a graduate, and then I also developed websites. So I've kind of married all these different disciplines into making these prosthetics and furthering my ideas. And so I started off, so this was 15 years ago, I started off making facial prosthetics. And I work at the cancer hospital. And so most of the people that I see have had cancer, but I'll occasionally get some people who have been burned or in a car accident. I mean, you name it. There, I've made ears for people who have been in bar fights, you know, and someone bites off their ear. I mean, it's Mike Tyson-like, you know. But they take off a lot bigger chunk than Mike Tyson did. You know, you name it, and kind of I've seen it. So I've seen self-inflicted gunshot wounds. I've seen burns. There are actually people, too, that are born without ears. And so over the years, people come to me when surgery does not work. And they're kind of desperate, and they're looking for someone to help them. And so, you know, I've made chins, I've made foreheads, I've done custom wigs, you name it on the body, and I've basically done it. So I'm starting to now turn down projects because I can't, there are some things that I just, you know, can't do. I used to be at the attitude, you know, if it's going to help someone, let's go for it, you know. Gotcha. But sometimes I get some really odd requests.
Gotcha. I can imagine.
So, yeah.
As a person that's been kind of been bullied, and there's a lot of bullying going on with people that face these type of situations, I'm sure they get looked at, gawked at, and, you know, I like the idea of the whole again, because, you know, they can feel confident once more. They can, you know, feel like they're not getting kind of looked down on for a disability, or would you say?
Yeah, what I try and do is I try and make it easier for them. I try to ease their transition into normal life, because, you know, when you think about it, so let's take the kids that are born without ears for an example. Mm-hmm. So I see them at about 4 or 5 years old. It's before kindergarten. It's before bullying, you know?
Yeah.
And what you'll find is that everyone questions their looks, and it's usually in the junior high age. some people question them earlier, some people probably question them later, but they'll be really critical around junior high. And what I see with these young kids is that they are basically questioned. They're kind of forced into questioning because people make comments, and most are adults, actually. You know, it'll be adults that are staring, you know, wondering what's going on. But really, I'm just trying to help these kids transition a little bit earlier to becoming comfortable in, you know, with the way they look. So, and certainly there's a functional component too, you know, it's hard to wear glasses and all that stuff. So
I guess a follow-up question is, if I was born without an ear and I needed a prosthetic ear, or is it glued on, is it how does it stay in place, I guess?
Sure. Yeah, we have two different methods. We can either glue it on, which works very well. It stays on for a full day. People can leave it on for a couple of days if they really want it. They can swim with it. They can do, you know, whatever they really want with it. And then we also have another method, and that is with these implants. And then so that there are these titanium screws that are put into the bone, into the skull, and then they can snap the ear on.
Oh.
So
I actually had a buddy that had that. He was born with both of his ears gone, and that's the way his were, that he could snap them on.
I bet I know him.
Yeah, he was actually a twin, so both of them didn't have ears.
Yeah, so we can't mention any names, but right. I do know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Wow. Yeah, it's an interesting world. Yeah. He's a great guy. Good. I haven't seen him probably in 15 years, but
So I see most of the people that I help are in the Intermountain West. I do have some people that come from, you know, across the U.S., you know, like Florida or East Coast or wherever. And then occasionally, it's not very often, but I will have people. I've had a woman from Latvia. Right now, I'm just finishing an ear prosthesis for a kid in Romania. So I'm trying to reach out. You know, these people, they don't have anyone that can help them in their countries, and so I see this as a way that I can.
So how does that work in another country? Do you just donate it, or how does that work?
No, I mean, I wish I could get, you know, donations for it. Because ultimately, I have to survive, and I can't
right.
I can't do everything for free. It is still a job.
Right.
You know, there's advantages and disadvantages to every job. That's why you get paid.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've got to learn how to support my family, just like everybody else does. So I can't do it for free, but. Yeah, I mean, I'd love it. If occasionally there will be, you know, some people that will do GoFundMe campaigns or whatever, and they'll try and get some funds on their own to pay for prosthesis. And, you know, I just try and make the prosthetics very affordable. They're certainly way less expensive than surgery. And we can get a good functional result. And people are really happy. One thing that's really unique about me, this is in healthcare. This is unheard of in healthcare. So I warranty the prosthesis for a couple of years. So not only do I provide a warranty that it will last, but I actually do a satisfaction guarantee. So a 90-day satisfaction guarantee. So if I can't help these people, then I retract all charges, and all they have to do is give me the prosthesis back. That's the way I ensure that I'm helping people.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's great.
So, super awesome.
Have you ever heard of that in healthcare?
No.
Pay it or
guarantee. A guarantee and a warranty.
No. Yeah, you don't.
Novel.
You don't
hear that. They're novel, you know, ideas, but you know, for some reason we haven't quite figured that out in healthcare.
Gotcha. I just wanted to move on to the video that I saw about women and the breast and just how it kind of changed their lives. Did you want to talk about that? You don't have to, but I thought it was a really inspiring.
Yeah. So about 8 or 9 years ago, I had a pretty amazing experience with this woman. So, you know, I get all these requests, and I got this request from a woman who had breast cancer. And so she wanted nipple prosthetics. And I had no idea how impactful this would be. So listen to this. I was standing in the room. I made the custom nipple prosthetic, so I take pre-mastectomy photographs. Just so you know, everyone that has a mastectomy, nearly everyone loses their nipple. Most people don't know that's involved in that. So that's approximately 90,000 women each year, U.S. women each year. That doesn't even include the world. So there are a lot of women that go through this, and it's a terrible experience. So this woman was wanting nipples back. And so I made the nipples, and I was in the room with her when she put them on. And when you go through breast cancer, you don't, these women, they kind of lose their modesty, I guess you could say. I mean, they're showing all the doctors and all the medical students and everyone, and everybody's talking about their breasts, and they just become, I guess in a way they're kind of more open about it, okay? So number one, she's feeling comfortable with me in the room, okay? So she's looking in the mirror, she puts on the nipples, and she looks up in the mirror, and she's just delighted. You know, she has the biggest grin on her face. But then, here's what I didn't expect. She glances over at me, and then she blushes, and she pulls her shirt down. And she tells me that she felt naked for the first time since her surgery, since her mastectomy.
Wow.
And that was just amazing to me. Like, it was an immediate impact. And I thought, holy smokes, this is huge. I've got to do something about this. So then what happened was, about the same time, I did a humanitarian project for a girl in Guatemala. So she was missing her nose. She had an accident and she lost her nose. They were not able to fly me to Guatemala to help her. And so what they did was they made molds, and then they sent me pictures, and they said, you know, try it, you know, just go for it. You have nothing to lose. So I made the nose prosthesis, and I was pretty skeptical that it would even work. You know, it would even be close, and she'd even want to wear it. So they deliver it to her, and they take a picture and send it to me, and the colors matched really well. So I was also in a previous job. I was also in dermatology, so I kind of have a background in skin and just knowing the anatomy and whatnot. So I think that helped me match the color. Just by looking at a picture, because I kind of know the color of skin. And so that was only a few months earlier, and so I had this, like, light bulb idea. I thought, you know, this is the future of prosthetics, you know, essentially virtual prosthetics. And so I built a website. You know, I've never done advertising for it. And I built a website where women can order nipple prosthetics, and they submit a pre-mastectomy photograph, and then if I would love for this to happen, but I'm trying to get these impression kits in the mail to these women before they have their mastectomy, because that way they can get the shape of their nipple. You know, before. So anyway, wow. I'll talk about that in a minute, because that's the future. but anyway, my idea was to allow these women from all over to get their nipples. So I could mass produce these. You know, that's happened for, I don't know, 20 years. But the problem is nobody wants to wear those because they don't mean anything. They don't change lives. It's not theirs. So what I've done is I've kind of streamlined this customization process where I can give women their nipples back, and it's been super fun to see. That's probably the video that you're talking about on our website.
Yeah.
And if you want to watch that, if you want to watch that video on our website, the website's feelingwholeagain.com. I also did a TED Talk in Salt Lake, so TEDx, Salt Lake City. You could probably find it there, or YouTube Paul Tanner and prosthetics or something like that, and you could find it, or TED Talk, Paul Tanner TED Talk. Wow. You can see a video of what I do.
Yeah, we'll definitely post it on the
website. So
we'll put them all on our website so folks can see them for sure. We'll put them all up on the Biz for Good Show website.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks. Thanks for spreading the word. You know, that's the only way.
It's awesome what you do.
This is a brand new service, and so it's really the only way. You know, as you can imagine, you can't advertise nipples. You know, with Google or Facebook.
Yeah, I would
really.
That would be.
Yeah, you can imagine what kind of ads there would be.
Yeah.
So we really rely on word of mouth and you know, women going through this to share it with
them. How many do you do, like, a month or a year? Or, I mean, how many do you usually get out there, just out of curiosity?
Yeah, so we certainly are growing. It has been more challenging than I thought, because I think it's such a brilliant idea. It's been more challenging than I thought, because there's a lot of, we're changing referral patterns. So these women, what normally happens is they have a mastectomy, they get breast reconstruction, and finally about 2 years after their initial mastectomy, that's when they start looking into tattooing. So I'm going to give you a little nipple anatomy. The color, the nipple is actually a projected skin, the projected muscle, but the colored part around the nipple is called the areola. So they will get areola tattooing. The problem is there's no projection to it or anything like that. So, you know, women just kind of give up on this, or they do the tattooing. We're introducing something that's brand new that women can use like 3 weeks after their surgery,
wow,
whether they're doing breast reconstruction or not. So this is our idea is that we can help people sooner, and that's the most difficult time. I mean, it's hard for us as men to imagine, but when the women, when they have a mastectomy and they first take those bandages off, it's a real trying experience for them, and it can be really hard. And so my hope is that I can have the prostheses in their hands so that they can have some recollection of, you know, what they, you know, what is normal, you know, what is what they're used to. So that's, you know, that's my hope. That's my goal. That's my mission, I should say.
Do you have any, like, mentorship program, or, like, if somebody wanted to learn how to do that, or just curious?
For the nipple prosthetics?
Any prosthetics.
Well, like, you know, the craft that you've been learning, do you have anybody that you would pass
that? How do you become that?
Yeah, how do you become an anaprosthologist?
Yeah, do you have to have a doctor background, or what?
No, you don't. I mean, you have to like building things, you have to be good at building things, and you got to be a problem solver, and you got to be an artist, and then understanding. I think empathy is a huge one too, by the way.
Yeah.
So did you self-teach yourself? Did you
No, I kind of, well, I mean, certainly in any profession, you're teaching yourself. That's the, that's how you grow, you know? So yeah, I'm always experimenting. I'm trying new materials.
Did you have an internship or how do you get it? Did you have an internship with somebody that did it too? Or?
Yeah. So when I started out, I would do apprenticeships with different people around the country. And, so now I teach. So I've taught courses in, I've done a bunch of courses in Brazil. I've done Colombia, Turkey. You know, there's a huge need for it, especially in other countries. The U.S. has a lot more of my colleagues. I would guess we have about 110 of my colleagues, anaplastologists. You know, in the U.S. So it's one or two per state. Oh, I'm going to jump back too. You asked me the volume.
Oh yeah.
So as of now, I've made I don't know, a few thousand, and I would say so. I know I've sold to 20 different countries, and it's only going to grow from here because I have big plans for the future.
Oh, that's just so awesome. I mean, I think that right there is the epitome of Biz for Good. I mean, you're giving people basically their old life back. I mean, it's a powerful, powerful thing. And thank you for taking that on.
It's fun. I enjoy it. So my plans for the future, and this is where teaching gets involved again, to respond to your question. So I'm really planning on starting a new industry. So my goal this year is to I've already invested tens of thousands of dollars in this. I am supplying impression kits to, you know, this molding material to surgeons across the country. And my hope is that these women, before they have their mastectomy, they'll be able to have those impression kits. And then if they choose to use our services, great. If they don't, no big deal. I mean, it's up to them, you know. I mean, everyone's different. Everyone feels whole again in different ways. We don't have a corner on the market there, you know. Like, we're not the only thing that will help. Sometimes it's lingerie, sometimes it's therapy. There can be a lot of different things that help women feel whole. But if this works, and this is 90,000 new women each year, if this works, we will be giving birth to a new industry, and then we will, there's no way that we will be able to keep up with all of these. And so that's where I envision some training, and helping, you know, different people across the country get easier access to this service.
Yeah, that is awesome.
So anyway, that's kind of my big vision for it, and it incorporates your teaching question and volume and whatnot.
Awesome. Well, Paul, thank you so much for being on the show. I mean, you're a powerful person doing just an amazing thing for so many, and it's just a pleasure to have you on the show and see the impact that you're making on the world. It's what the Biz for Good show is all about, so people understand and know that there just really is a lot of good in the world. There's a lot of people doing a lot of good things, and you're one of them.
Yeah, and you guys are doing good too, because without you sharing it, I wouldn't be able to do any good, and so you're doing good too. And if we work together, then we can go a long way.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much, Paul, for being on the show.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. We'll see ya.
Thank you for listening to the Biz for Good show series with Bobby Glenn James and Ryan Pilkington. We want to thank our guests and all our fans of the show. Again, you can find us online at bizforgoodshow.com and on all our social platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. Have a great day, and remember, be good, do good.